My name, if some of you haven't met me yet, is Janice Goodman, and I'm here on teaching staff, teaching a series on Native Americans. But I have other hats that I wear. And one of the most recent hats is as a result of a journey that I made to Minneapolis less than 2 weeks ago. And the reason I wanted to have time to talk is because I wanted to tell a story about what happened to me.
That's a phone call.
Mm-hmm. You have to do it.
No. Susan does. Can I make the check? Excuse me.
A couple of weeks ago, I went to Minneapolis to meet in a consultation with the design committee for the new Lutheran church. The design committee is deciding on the shape and design of, or collecting recommendations that would be recommended to the Commission of 70, those people who are gathering together to shape the new church. And there were two women from the Pacific Northwest at this consultation. We were asked two questions. What form should women's ministry, or ministry by women, ministry to women, ministry with women, ministry for women, what ways will that fit into the structure of the New Lutheran Church? And where will we take our already existing women's organizations and put them into the new church? The debates have already gone on as to whether or not there should be a women's organization in the new church. The progress report number 5 indicated that there would be a women's organization, and it indicated that they would ask the question, should there be a women's ministry unit in the new church? And so the consultation was 14 women from around the nation asked these questions. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it's very interesting and significant moment in the church. Never before have women been asked, before something was set in concrete, where would you be in the structure. The result of consultation amongst the women and then between the women and the design committee resulted in an adoption by the design committee of this proposal, that there be in the new church a woman's organization that will exist as a church-wide unit. In other words, it will exist at the congregational level, at the regional level, at the synodical level, the regional level, and the church wide unit. This organization would be an organization that will be the same sort of status as a board of publications or a board of pensions, any of the other church-wide units. In addition to a women's organization, the recommendation is that we have a commission for women, women's ministry, or commission for women. And commission is a commission, just like the other commissions in the church. It is a policy setting, monitoring, program developing unit that is at the highest level of the church, at the same levels as the other commissions, the commissions for church and society, commission for world mission and ecumenism, and those kinds of commissions. Now, that's where the process is. The design of the new church says this will be the skeleton. There'll be two organizations, and these two organizations will be related together by board members that are in common. 6 board members from the women's organization will be on the commission for women. The question that is going out to women and men in the church is, what should the women's organization be like? And what are the needs and directions that a ministry to women, with women, for women, by women, should take. And hopefully tonight's discussion will hear from you. What are the needs? Why do we need ministry to women? What are the gifts that women can bring to the new church? What are some of the questions? They're putting together work units now, and people who are interested can be involved in saying, and I think this is really significant for people who feel that there's nothing happening in the church for you, for your own position. What is your position? What would you like to see happen? And that's kind of a vision. And so we have here our visions person who has also some visions. And I would like to hear, as a part of our panel discussion and then as a part of the group, what your visions are for women's ministry and what your experiences are. What do you want to keep? What do you want to let go of? Whatever.
Me?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm Gary Bornson, and my background or my specialty is supposed to be in physics and mathematics, which doesn't seem to fit here at all. I guess that makes me somewhat of a theorist, which is what I enjoy doing, although I like to practice some things too once in a while. And in particular, what I'd like to try to do tonight is to put some of these issues in a larger context of the my interpretation or understanding of the effect that the feminist critique or the feminist movement is having society-wide, not just in the church. My own interests have been in the effect of feminism in science, but that's only as one little part of the effects of what I see as being a large, radical, world-shaking movement resulting from sort of the arising of sort of a new dimension, a new way of looking at the world, looking at values. And it's, I guess I've heard it said that there's three kinds of feminists. There's the one that wants to put women into all the old male positions without really changing those positions in any substantial way. And then there's the feminist that wants to change those institutions and positions to make them reflect a more feminist perspective. And then there's the feminist that wants to change the whole world. And I guess I put myself in the third category. And it makes me sometimes, especially I guess because I am a man and I don't have the perspective of a woman, I haven't lived the life of a woman, I haven't seen the world through a woman's eyes, I can't always speak with the empathy or the understanding or the true passion that a woman has, especially a woman who's been in some way or other oppressed, as maybe all women have, or one who's been victimized in some way, so that there is a personal passion for the message that she has. I'm more of a, being a man, more of a detached theorist, especially being a white man. My point of view does not have that, perhaps that same gut conviction, but there's a lot of gut conviction there anyway, and I hope you'll look for that. With that much of an introduction, I guess I have a number of things I like to say that are going to be very old stuff to some of you, and for some of you it might be sort of revolutionary. I'm going to try to put together a perspective on, or try to clarify, at least clarified it for me writing this out today, what is the nature of the critique that feminism is addressing to our society and to our social problems, and then hopefully be able to particularize that to the church a little bit. I consider that we live in a male-dominated world, and we have for at least 3,000 years, at least in our culture, has grown up out of roots of male dominance. So I'm not going to try to prove that or argue that. I'm going to take that as an assumption. In fact, the world today seems to be a white male-dominated world. And in a lot of ways, it's a pretty good world. Especially I can say that as a beneficiary of it, being part of the elite of this country. But even for people lower down the economic ladder and lower down the status ladder than me, there have been some goodies that these white males have brought to the earth. For example, we've got rid of smallpox. Let's give a pause for men. They've got rid of smallpox. Okay. But there's also many problems that have arisen, and that seem to have arisen not just incidentally to the way the world's being run, but almost necessarily. They come out of a value system that seems to lead almost inevitably to these problems. The problems result from the system working too well, not from the system breaking down, but from the system working too well. And the two problems I want to focus on in particular would be threat of nuclear holocaust and the threat of eco-catastrophe or biodisaster. Those seem to be in some ways almost the inevitable direction that we've been going. I believe that both these problems arise from a sort of a one-sided value system that many people, or that our culture, tends to identify with maleness. It's not necessarily that all men are this way, nor that all women are otherwise, but you can use that category as a descriptive to classify a syndrome or a pattern or a way of thinking. And that way of thinking involves certain characteristics I'd like to discuss. I don't want to offend any males, nor do I want to make the females feel all great either, because I think both males and females buy into this system to some more or less degree. But I think it's convenient to characterize it with the label of masculine value system or male-dominated value system. We have failed to recognize interconnectedness and interdependency among all people. And interdependency and interconnectedness between people and their social environment, and between people and their physical environment, the earth and all creation. This interdependence and interconnectedness is a really crucial value that I think the feminist movement has raised up again and said, look, this is something which we've kind of lost sight of. In fact, identity is conferred by relationship, not by definition. I can't define myself as an entity here contained within this skin and say, I am this, I am that. My identity really is based on the relationships with all other people and all other creatures. The definition of a word is determined not absolutely by looking it up in the dictionary. It's determined by the totality of contexts in which that word occurs. Words exist in context. They exist in relationship. And those relationships comprise the definition of the word. This is a different way of looking at things. Things are not separated, definable, boxable, bounded entities. Things are relationship. We white, especially white, Western males have exalted and idealized the rational, analytic, objective processes. We like to divide things into parts, make distinctions, the subtler the better. We like to separate things, we like to make little boxes, we like to draw boundaries, we like to name things, evaluate things, judge, classify. We like to establish hierarchies of superiority and inferiority, better, worse, worthy and less worthy, first and last. We love numbers. We love numbers. We love measuring things and scorekeeping. In fact, it was said by somebody that the big distinction between men and women is that men really like to keep score. I'm not sure. I've seen some women like to keep score too. But Carol Gilligan, a pretty famous feminist writer on of one particular school of feminism, has pointed out that men are rule makers. They love rules, they love logic, they love law. We define ourselves as separate from others. In fact, this is seen as an achievement of development. The mature male is the one who recognizes his separateness and has established his identity. Whereas the mature female is seen more so as one who recognizes relationships. We define ourselves as separate from friends, separate from enemies, and we make very careful distinctions between friends and enemies. We are separate from women, we're separate from non-whites, we're separate from animals. Man is separate from the animal kingdom, and we try to name all the reasons why we're separate and superior. We're separate from the earth. In fact, we're separate from God. God then must transcend, come across the gap in order to be able to relate to us. Our God is male. Our God is male and transcendent. Separate. He is separate. He's distinguishable. He's a noun. He's an other object in a relationship. And yet, we're beginning to recognize under the feminist critique that God is also female, that God is immanent, here, present, connected, not boxable, a verb, not a noun, in process, located in processes, not located in people necessarily or in objects, but located in processes, located in relationship, if you want to locate. We men like to compete, dominate, exploit others. We exploit and pollute the earth. We build weapons of mass destruction. We build phallic missiles to deliver these weapons. In fact, I've always wondered, why don't we just smuggle our bombs into the enemy country, wherever that might be, smuggle them in clandestinely. We can smuggle drugs across the borders really easily. Why can't we can fly them in DC-3s. Why can't we smuggle in the bombs and plant them all over and have them radio controlled so we can detonate them anytime we want to? We don't need the missiles, but we like the missiles. The missiles are fun. There's no pride in being able to smuggle bombs into a country. There's this great macho pride in being able to deliver these missiles, these grandiose missiles, with their blazing smoke and fury and fire. But if we smuggled our bombs into another country and they smuggled theirs into ours, that would make the missiles obsolete. Those people would have no jobs. It would also make the Star Wars program obsolete, and those people would have no jobs, and it wouldn't be very popular. So, what are some of the dimensions of a feminist critique of all that? I'll try to get this done a little quicker than we're going here, getting carried away. First of all, a feminist would challenge and question all of those above assumptions. Thus, a feminist might emphasize relationship, interdependency, connections more so than dichotomies, integrative thinking rather than disjointed, separative thinking, emphasis on processes, more process-oriented than goal or achievement or success-oriented. I'm reminded of Mother Teresa's statement about another famous one, I'm not called to be successful, I'm called to be faithful. A very feminist style statement. One might explicitly acknowledge inevitable biases and assumptions and perspectives and the impossibility of objectivity that men keep claiming they can achieve and strive for, this detachment. A woman or a feminist, not necessarily a woman, would acknowledge the inevitability of connectedness and participation in everything that one observes. There's a redefining of power, and certainly a redistribution of power, or a desire to redistribute power, an acknowledgement of vulnerability as well. Values, participation, a feminist perspective would value participation over control. Here I am controlling this discussion. would value grassroots networking over hierarchical structure. Would value flexibility over efficiency. Would value cooperative work over individual achievement. would value transformation over victory. And would look at a situation, or look at the world, this one's crucial, I've saved it for last, but it's one of the most important. Would look at any situation from the underside, through the eyes of the poor, through the eyes of the victim or the oppressed, through the eyes of those without power or wealth or privilege. And when you look through those eyes, everything looks different. Everything looks different. So, summary. In times of rapid change and environmental stress, the species which survive are not those that are most efficient or best adapted to the environment, for the environment is changing. Rather, the species which survive are those which are the most adaptable, those which with the greatest diversity, with the fullest bag of tricks. This is certainly a time for us to bring to bear all the human resources, all the diversity, all the perspectives, all the wisdom of all the peoples of the earth, of all colors, and clearly of both sexes. Yes, I want full and equal inclusion of women at all levels in the church. I don't know that that'll work or help. I don't even know if it'll make much difference, except for sure it will make a difference to those particular women, but that alone is reason enough to do it. But I do know, speaking as a man, that I do not want to risk keeping on going the way we're going. And I'm desperate enough to try anything, even accepting women as equals. If we cannot recognize this issue as a major matter of justice, then perhaps we can at least see it as a matter of survival. And let's get on with it.
Maria, I invited you to join this panel. Rather cold, but I really feel that your voice is important.
Okay, I've got a few things I can say, especially in the reaction kind of to what you've said and what Gary said. I'm Marie Schrader. I'm the national treasurer of the Lutheran Women's Caucus, which is a small organization based in Chicago. We are a Christian feminist organization dedicated to the full equality of opportunity for men and women in all aspects of the church, especially the Lutheran Church. There are other women's caucuses in, for instance, Evangelical Women's Caucus, a Methodist Women's Caucus, I think Presbyterian too, so that many of the churches are feeling the same way. We do educational work as much as we possibly can. We publish the Well Woman, which is a title taken from the woman at the well to whom Jesus revealed himself so clearly. That's a quarterly publication with a lot of good articles. We have bi-yearly, every other year.
Biannual.
Okay. Convocations. The last year we had one in Seattle, at which we try to have one as famous as possible feminist speaker. We put out packets of information. We have what we call sister sources, just a whole collection of articles and writings about feminism. We have one on abortion, presenting a whole abortion issue from many angles so that people can learn more about it, and how it affects people, and judge for themselves where they want to stand on the issue. We have one on worship, especially inclusive worship, and we're trying to put out one on theology. It's taking a little bit longer to do that one. Because we got caught up in a women's devotional book. And this is one aspect that I think is very important in the new church. What one of the best things that Christian feminism has done is been able to interpret the scriptures from a feminine viewpoint. Women who are finally getting into ministry and learning the original languages and being able to look at these passages and say, good grief, why has this been translated like this? Why is it that God the Father embraces his children in his bosom? Well, you look at the text, you know, and you think, why doesn't the translation talk about God as female in places where the picture, the image, definitely is? This is, you know, a tremendous viewpoint. I used to think it was not that important until I read something a while ago talking about how we speak of God. I thought, well, you know, that's not important. What's important is how we treat each other, how we speak of each other and give each other, empower each other for our own particular ministries. But this article said, we all agree that God is so far beyond our imaginations and our words to describe that there is no way in which our words are in any way adequate to call God anything. So we talk in images and pictures. Therefore, when we call God anything, it really says more about us and our social structure than it does about God. So when you look at the fact that God in our culture is always called He, that says an awful lot about us and the church, not really about God. So when we discover ways of showing how God is just as female as male, we make a great impact, I think. And when we learn, this particular article, whose author I can't remember, well, I should have brought it along, said there is no way that just having a liturgy that talks of God as he or she is going to cut it. We have got to learn to have a whole liturgy, a whole scripture lesson, a whole body of devotional work where we call God she, and get used to that, just as used to that as we are to calling God he, before we can finally turn our minds around and wrap ourselves around this concept and finally realize God as she says a lot about us, that the she in this world is just as important and worthy as any he. But to get back to our devotional book, we have about 100 or 150 women in our Lutheran Women's Caucus who are writing a women's devotional book that's supposed to come out later on this summer. I'll be glad to give anybody the address of the Lutheran Women's Caucus. And I encourage you all to be members. It's $20 a year.
Thank you. Do you want to jump in?
Well, no, I really appreciate what all three of you said, and I don't think that I can add anything that would be that significantly different. I would really like to hear what is being thought out here. Is there anybody that doesn't know who I am? Okay. What?
The world's probably full of people like me.
People like what? Who I am. Okay, well, a literalist.
It's relational.
It's right. Right. Is there anyone in this room who does not know who I am? Is that okay?
What?
It wouldn't have made if they did.
So you're invited to be very personal. Yes. What is feminism, or the experience of God as a woman, or any of this mean to you, to be speak to it as a church level, speak to it as the salvation or survival of humanity? Yes.
I'd like to say something. When you talk about a separate women's organization, I really see the advantage in the church for having that. But I don't see the advantage for women. You're not having a separate men's organization. And I think you really do a disservice to women to separate that in that way. If you have a separate women's organization, you will never have women actually working into the network of the power structure of the church. It's a separating kind of thing that can always keep them outside of that power structure.
If I had my way, I would have a community of men and women in church and society without the kinds of separation. When I was invited to participate in it, those decisions had already been made.
I want to comment on that because I anticipated that someone would say that. Because I said the same thing when I first thought about it. I thought, well, I mean, my wife and I are happily married and we get along pretty well and we talk together pretty well, and I like that. I like trying to put together male and female complementary perspectives into one thing and say, you need both. And to have something separate just makes the other part that's left over seem all the more male. And I that doesn't seem good. But there's a real strong argument within, I mean, I'm sure you know the argument that it occurs not just in the church, but all the way through, whether or not women should do things separately for a while at least, until, in order to establish very clearly where the differences lie. If they immediately become amalgamated and the men say, okay, we'll let you into our system, that patronizing, benevolent thing just basically co-opts whatever distinctiveness the women could have brought into the picture. They become then, let me read the one thing I was going to read. Yet, a separate radical feminist culture within a patriarchal society is necessary so that we can learn to speak our own bodies and our own experiences. So the male culture representing itself as the universal does not continue to speak for us. And I think I've come in my own mind to value that there be allowed, that there be encouraged, that women should feel free and to create separate, definitely for women only entities that I would be excluded from in order to allow the possibility that they can more clearly articulate what it is what exactly their critique is.
I think it's an interesting argument, but my experience in the church is that the women that are drawn to the women's organization are not the true feminists. We try to get on the church councils, and we try to be active in the church and to help plan the direction of our churches. Mm-hmm. We don't usually get off into altar guild and cooking in the kitchen and the things that are traditionally female. And I believe by having a separate women's organization, you're still encouraging those women to be separate from the feminist women. And I think the two should be more together.
The design committee agreed with you. We first, at the request of the Lutheran women's organizations, presented two separate proposals, one for a separate women's organization and one for a separate commission for women. The design committee came back to us saying, women be unified, and they have insisted on the connections between the women's organization and the commission for women. So it's...
I like what I heard you say, Mary, and read. Mm-hmm. But I also find myself in agreement with you in my flat. I just don't trust yet a women's organization within a structure that's going to be radical enough to challenge the structure that's already present. I'd like to, but I'm struggling with that.
I work with campus ministry, Lutheran campus ministry, and campus ministry I think is really very good about, and the women had to press the issue, getting time together to talk and consider issues. And it surprised the heck out of me when I came, you know, I thought, what do we need this for? And several of the male clergy in the group said, what do you women need a group to talk for? Now these are our professional women in this respect. And all of a sudden, I personally came face to face with some issues that I said, whoa, I need to talk with my sisters about. And a male ear would not listen. It would question or throw things out, and the voice here would be squelched. And I think this is an important voice. So I do uphold very much, I think, a notion of need for separate time. I think we also have to hold, in my own biblical feminism, and I have to ask myself the question, and I don't ask it as a question to get easy on myself or the system or whatever, but I have to ask myself the question, what am I upholding here? Am I simply upholding woman, or am I upholding God and the community of God? And to me, it is a reality when I sit in a church group with a group of women, and they argue for 15 minutes about what color napkins they're going to have at the next event, and it just drives me out of my mind. What the heck does that have to do with Christian ministry? Not everybody is where we are. Not all women are unified. And I think it's an equally co-opting and inappropriate kind of thing for women to force radical issues on women who aren't there yet. We've got to, you know, hear to speech kind of thing. We've got, if our goal is to gain consensus, is to build and upbuild and empower and love one another to a point, we don't do that by panel discussions which offer only answers. And so I think we need to help empower and provide places and then encourage through the structure, ever keeping in mind that we still got to do, we got to do sword battle on other fronts.
A sword battle?
Yeah. a circle battle?
I think I might feel happier with your separate organization if you could explain to me what that organization is going to consist of. I'm afraid it's going to be another, LCW, where the women do the social events of the church, where I think the men should be involved with the social events of the church. The men should be on altar guild. Men should do the kitchen work as well as the women. I think there should be that cross-traditional roles type of thing going on in the church, which very much isn't going on right now.
Yeah, that's really the question I'm asking you. I mean, you know, I have a lot of ideas about what I... But what would the women's organization be that had a place for you in your position?
Well, I believe that rather than having all of those social events be part of this organization, I would rather get rid of that and have that a committee in the church, you know, that was open to men and women.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of ministry would a women's organization do? Not only to the church, but maybe to the world.
Boy.
I think if we think about it just for a minute, you can name the crying needs that are not being met.
Well, I would rather think that it wouldn't be a separation from the men's functions that would meet the needs. I mean, we all, I think, look at certain needs, the justice, the peace, the things we talked about and hope for. But I think men are concerned about that too. I would hate to have a women's section being over the peace and justice issues, the anti-nuclear war issues, the important issues of the day. I would hope that the whole church would be concerned about that.
But it seems to me that there are particular issues like feminization of poverty and violence and abuse against women that aren't being dealt with other places, that women would have a role in bringing to the front of the church's agenda.
Feminization of poverty. Does that speak to anybody's experience? Violence against women and children.
Why should those be only women's issues? That's my concern. What I would hope for a women's separate organization, if it does have to be separate, is that it would be like a satellite of what's going on within the church. That might be a watchdog or an ombudsman to make sure that these things are happening within the total church. That would be a true function.
It sounds like that's what the commission idea would do, isn't it?
Well, I lift it up to be something that can be done in both areas, not only the commission, but in the women's organization.
You know, the Commission for Women will not operate on the congregational level.
But being an equal commission with other commissions in the New Lutheran Church, it would have
it
the power
sense,
to
yes.
to publish and bring to the fore questions with equal authority, mm-hmm. not just coming from, you know, that maybe large or small women's group. You know, the women have a little concern that we'd like to present today, you know, but that this is a commission of the church, and this is our concern, and let's get it out.
One concern I've got, I've only become a feminist, I think I've become one, over the last 5 years because of a lot of personal anguish, just questions that I never had answered. And I have to look other places for the answers, and I've done a great deal of reading over the last 5 years and been satisfied, answered a lot of my own questions. But the thing that strikes me, I'm a pastor's wife, and I'm not really all that interested in most of the stuff like the altar guild and the potluck suppers. And actually, I find them excruciatingly boring. But I am interested in the young women that are coming into the church. And I think I see a real difference between their attitudes towards being female and the older group. And they have a lot of questions that they really want to have answered. And they want to go to the Bible to find those answers. But I'm no theologian, and I can't go to the Bible. I have many questions myself. Now, why haven't we come up with some kind of a study, a woman's issue Bible study group that might answer questions like some of my questions are, what has the creation story done to contribute to this traditional male-dominated society that we live in? And what does Timothy mean? I think it's Timothy in the book of Timothy mean when he's talking about the subjugation of women in very definite terms, that a woman is under a man. I can't stomach that, but if it's true, I'll try and believe it. If it's not true, I'd like other people to know that. But I feel like I'm tired because I'm not a theologian. I'm not that smart. All I've got is the stuff that I've read. I don't have the answers, and I think we should have the answers or some possible solutions. Have they come up with any kind of a Bible study group that deals with women's issues?
Because something about relationships.
I think there's a lot of things out there, but I think there's room for so many more, and it doesn't come out in the Lutheran Church. It's out
no,
there,
it's not
but
the
it's
Church.
Not in the Lutheran Church.
No. Because yeah, I've looked and I haven't found anything.
The ALC Scope magazine for this whole year is on women. The Bible studies are all on women of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Margaret Wold.
Marjorie. And that's, you know, that's an avenue. That's one thing. Anything else that you'd like to see? Other issues that haven't been named.
What is being done to encourage more women to become pastors and to support them when they go to seminary and in parishes and in other places?
In the call process.
And to help them find a second call.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think there are women who have looked into ordination who could speak to what has been done. Maybe we could ask what should be done, because I think what has been done is not necessarily a happy history. What should be done?
I don't know how, but I certainly believe it's
support,
be encouraged.
Encouragement.
No, it's not specifically for women, but it's for both. But my home congregation provides, you know, encourages people with monetary support towards seminary, and I know I come from a town of 2,000 people, and we have one who is just a woman that was just ordained last year or the year before, but she has preached many times while we at the seminary at the church, and very well accepted in our community.
Has your church called a woman pastor?
My home church, no. They have two men, one from Vienna, who happened to come to the United States with them. A conservative Norwegian. But it, you know, I thought it was good to have a person from Guyana I thought it took a lot for them to go that far in a small northern Wisconsin community.
As far as I know, in the Pacific Northwest, there's only one parish that has a woman, two women on staff.
There is?
Yeah. Is it in the Northwest or is it in New Jersey?
I think it's in New Jersey. New Jersey. In the Northwest, then it has two women now who are senior solo pastors.
Two.
And how many women have been ordained?
No.
See, I know there's a, you
so
know, the
there
numbers. There are
place,
many, many, many more women who have been ordained. There are many women who are waiting for call. This is an issue. Will they get a call? And you know, will they get their own congregation? If they do have a call, they're called to be assistant pastors. And it's really a difficult thing to get your own congregation.